Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Wednesday afternoon, what we talk about this hour will be tenure and shared governance. Our guests are the authors of an opinion piece that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on June 7, titled Threats to Shared Governance and Tenure Put Mission of UW at Risk. The article goes on to say the University of Wisconsin has been in the national spotlight. It's become the poster child of ill-advised public policy initiatives that threaten the academic excellence that has defined the university for years. Joining us this hour, the authors of the piece, Richard Ligon, who is president of the Association of Governing Boards and Universities, and Susan Wheeler Johnston, executive vice president and chief operating officer of the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges. They advocate on behalf of the authority and leadership of governing boards, the 50,000 men and women who oversee the nation's colleges and universities, and they have expressed concern about what will probably be substantial changes to the UW system. We'll be welcoming phone calls. The question, of course, to you, the audience, is what do you think of the proposed changes in shared governance and tenure, which will probably be in the budget and decided very quickly now? It would appear that tenure will essentially not be in the state mission, and tenure will be changed substantially from what it has been, and we'll be looking at shared governance. Do you agree with the changes? Are you concerned about them? There are many people who are concerned. There are a number of members of the faculty of UW who have presented petitions to the legislature, and a number of national groups as well who have been concerned about these changes to the UW system. We welcome phone calls, as we always do. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Richard, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Kathleen.
Thank you. And Susan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Let's talk about what you have written about so eloquently, the university's relationship to what you call two of higher education's most essential values, shared governance and academic tenure. Why are they two of higher education's most essential values? Richard?
Yeah, these are essential values in terms of the excellence that we look to our colleges and universities to provide, especially in a place that is has such a powerful reputation as the University of Wisconsin, its reputation in providing education for your students from within the state and outside the state, in terms of doing cutting-edge research, in terms of providing opportunity, and in many ways driving the economy of the state. To achieve those important objectives, as the university has for many years, requires the kind of academic leadership and excellence in terms of faculty who feel empowered to achieve a level of opportunity for academic freedom, to share their views, to do cutting-edge research, and to be ensured that the historic values of what we look for academic leaders to provide is held up in the highest level within the institution. It is central, I think, for both the current challenges and the future needs of the state to have the kind of trust and engagement of faculty that y'all have had for many years.
Mm-hmm. There have been a large number. I think you cite the American Historical Association, 231 national associations of scholars across many disciplines who have expressed their displeasure with these changes. Is that right? And there are a number of people in the UW system who have petitioned the legislature as well. Susan?
Well, I don't think that we cited that number, but I'm not surprised by it. I think that the conversation in the higher education community has been one of surprise that a system as strong as that in the state of Wisconsin could threaten that the tenure system and that the shared governance would be threatened in a state like Wisconsin, where higher education is such a strength historically. These two pillars protect the most important asset that a higher education institution or system has, and that's the faculty. The faculty as teachers and the faculty as researchers, the faculty who create new knowledge, disseminate new knowledge, raise up the next generation of informed citizens and innovators. So I'm not surprised to hear that all these learned societies are weighing in. You know, what might be the surprise is that the governing boards are weighing in, which is what AGB decided it needed to do.
Mm-hmm. The Wisconsin Assembly Speaker, Robin Voss, has been very outspoken about tenure and shared governance. We have invited him to be on this show. The response was because of budget concerns. It's coming down to the wire. He can't now. We are hopeful that he will join us. But he has been widely quoted as saying a couple things, and I'd like your response. He says the concern from faculty, quote, is a lot of panic over something that's being sensationalized for political effect. He says rather than tenure being about academic freedom, it seems to be more about job protection. It's this idea a tenured professor could decide they don't have to show up or keep up with ideas in their field. The issue is much more about job performance and ensuring that students get a good education. Your response to that, Richard?
You know, it's a point of view that we have heard across the country from policy leaders. I think that it's one that overlooks the essential nature of how these institutions need to operate. Sure, there are some benefits to tenure that faculty leaders have earned and gained through hard work and many, many years and excellence in their profession. And so, you know, it's easy to use that kind of an argument when critiquing the nature of tenure. But it is so much more in terms of demonstrating the quality and the commitment to education that without it, you know, it's probably more important to ask what would the University of Wisconsin be if tenure was not in place. It might be that if you started the University of Wisconsin from scratch today, you'd say, do we need tenure? But to the extent that it is there, and in many ways it is, as Susan and I've said already, defined the quality and the excellence of the product coming out of it, that to argue its merits off of the easy argument that it's really about job security, I think is, as I said, to overlook the most salient aspects of why we need it, and we need to protect it, and to send a signal to faculty that their role is ultimately essential for what these institutions are going to be and how they're going to perform, how they're going to attract students, other academics, and the kind of research dollars that define who the university really is.
Go ahead.
I wonder if I could add to that.
Sure, of course.
Instead of looking at tenure as job protection, I'd call it quality protection.
Yeah.
I think that tenure is what attracts and retains the kind of faculty that Wisconsin's known for. It attracts the kinds of researchers that Wisconsin is known for. I read recently that the governor of Texas has committed $500 million to bring Nobel Prize winners to the University of Texas because he recognizes the value of academic research to the reputation and the economic vitality of the state. So I would put that in a very different light. Tenure is quality protection.
And just to follow up on that point, Kathleen, in the piece that we did write, we noted that some 20 or so Nobel laureates are able to be recognized as affiliated with the University of Wisconsin. Without tenure, the future of those kinds of folks coming to UW is you put that at risk.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you have any hard evidence? We've heard stories about faculty who are looking at other universities who are so upset about this that they maybe are looking for other jobs. Is there any hard evidence that shows that indeed is the case?
You know, I was on several calls last week from, and I won't name them, from system and institution leaders from around the country. I guess they read this piece. And they indicated that they are actually going to be making overtures to some top faculty from the University of Wisconsin. Whether that's valid or not, or they were just calling to say, "Hey, great piece," I don't really know. But it's out there. And why would the University of Wisconsin want to put such an economic driver and a reputational icon at risk that way?
Well, when you answer that question, Susan, what would you come up with? Why? Why do this?
Why put this at risk? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Why do you imagine? What would be the reasons behind it? I know you're not in favor of it, but if you were trying to analyze the position you don't agree with, what would be the reason for it?
Well, it's not... There have been a lot of attacks on tenure over the last decade or more. The total number of tenured faculty in the United States has declined, and I would imagine that people look at that and think, well, perhaps with less stringent tenure process in place, we might find additional flexibility in our institution. It's certainly a common point that you hear discussed when people talk about the decline in tenure. What's unusual, I think, though, in this circumstance is to talk about it at a flagship research university. You hear the kind of conversation about declining tenure in different types of institutions, but at a flagship public university focused on research where all the faculty do research, where the reputation is on high-quality teaching and research, and where actually the revenue from research is significant, not just to the institution but to the state. That's the puzzle for me, is what I'm not quite sure I can make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kathleen, there may be some, if I might just
sure.
jump in, there may be some policy leaders or others who look at tenure and automatically see an enormous additive price tag. And in a period of time where institutions are taking a hard look at their revenue and cost models, and in a state like Wisconsin, there's no secret that there's been some proposals for some substantial reductions in state support, they may see this as a way forward in looking at a way to control the budget, and so what's very unique about this, and it's probably what attracted our attention first, is the high probability that Wisconsin is the only state where the rules about tenure and shared governance, but certainly tenure, are written in the state law, as opposed to institutional or system-wide policy. And that's what attracted our attention to this issue through some calls, other than, you know, high-profile news coverage of what's mm-hmm. going on. But that's where we first kind of sat up and took notice. And then the more we dug into it, we saw some of these other related challenges and concerns. And so, again, coming at tenure singularly as a vehicle to be able to cut costs, I think, appropriately gets faculty unnerved, and it's something that the board should be concerned about as well.
The other issue that will be substantially changed is shared governance. Can you explain to us why you would think it's beneficial, what shared governance means, how long it's been around, and why it's beneficial?
Shared governance is the kind of collaborative or consultative process by which many of the important decisions are made within an institution. It ensures that a range of voices is heard and the best ideas are brought forward, that decision-making is improved because it's not a top-down decision-making process. There's consensus building, there's buy-in, and it brings together what to me is valuable about it, and where it works well, this is what's valuable about it. It brings together the faculty and the students along with members of the Board of Regents or Board of Trustees and the administration into conversation focused on what's best for the institution, so that it's not a singular voice, a singular perspective, but the full range of perspectives, particularly valuable in an institution of higher education where there are so many thoughtful people. Shared governance is just a core principle that works in higher education to higher education's advantage.
And, you know, Kathleen, we make decisions in colleges and universities in a rather unique way. Certainly, board leaders, many of whom, most of whom, come from the corporate sector where board decision-making is rather determinative. The board decides, and it is policy. Boards and other stakeholders in higher ed share a sandbox, if you will, where while boards have ultimate authority, fiduciary authority to make a decision, as Susan suggests, the value of engaging smart people who are all invested in the success of their students, success of the institution, come together to make the best decisions, it works. And what doesn't work about shared governance is when institutional leaders invite other stakeholders, like faculty, into those conversations at the 11th hour plus, but rather that where it works best is where shared governance is an ongoing process of engagement where trust can be built up so that if and when, unfortunately, tough choices may need to be made, there's that level of trust which enables smart people to make effective decisions for the good of the students, the good of the institution. So it is a principle that has long defined the sector, and we are strong supporters of.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. The article that caught our attention should be on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, if you'd like to read in some detail what Richard and Susan wrote. Richard Ligon is president of the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges. Susan Wheeler Johnston is executive vice president and CEO of the same organization. The piece they wrote that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel looked at what they see as very problematic changes to tenure and shared governance, which in all probability will become law in Wisconsin when the budget passes. Governor Walker has called his ideas for changes to the UW system the Act 10 of higher education. What do you think? Are these changes that make a lot of sense to you? Do you think that the university can operate more efficiently, less expensively, if there are changes to tenure, if there are changes to shared governance, or do you think these are items that don't have much to do with money at all? They're ideological items that shouldn't be in the budget. How would universities change in Wisconsin, those part of the UW system? If any of you listening are professors in UW system, what about, you'll know better than we would know, what do you hear around the water cooler when people are talking about these proposed changes? Are people indeed saying, wait a second, we don't want to teach here anymore if this happens? Here's how you reach our conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, or we always also welcome your comments. And we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we have many, many phone calls coming in, as I anticipated we might. We're going to start our calls with Joan from Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good afternoon. afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. My comment is that I do not believe that the University of Wisconsin wants any of this. I believe that this is all politically motivated. In other words, welcome to Scott Walker's political ambitions. Walker does not care if he ruins the stellar reputation of the University of Wisconsin, nor the students or citizens of Wisconsin who are served by the University of Wisconsin. I have to believe that Walker's benefactors, including the Koch brothers, do not want every citizen to be educated. Rather, they want only the wealthy to be educated. And thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, Joan. Let's go to you for a response first, Susan. Is this political?
Well, it looks like it to me, but I'm not a resident of the state, but it looks like it to me. You know, what I would prefer is to have people talk about getting more people into college and through college with high-quality degrees and good skills, make them better people and better citizens. I think that's where the conversation ought to be, and to have it focused on matters of tenure, which I think are fairly esoteric for a legislature to get into, does make me wonder, you know, the motivation behind it.
Richard, how are other states, as you mentioned in the article, are dealing with substantial issues of the cost of college, making sure it's affordable, making sure for universities that are state-funded in some measure that it's affordable for the state because they may be facing budget crunches. How are other states doing this, do you think, in a more fair-minded fashion, in your opinion?
You know, each state has its own politics and its own challenges, Kathleen, and so I don't know whether what is fair-minded for some may be heavy-handed for others. But what we are realizing across the states is a debate that I think is probably a political one, but it might be different than your most recent caller raised, and that is we need to have a conversation at the national level and across the states about the value proposition of higher education. Is it in fact a benefit for the public good, or is it solely a benefit for those who attend and graduate so that they can move into the middle or upper class in terms of a personal gain? You know, historically in this country, higher education, especially public higher education, where 80% of all of our students attend two-year and four-year public institutions across the country, has been seen as a part of a social compact. And the debate really is less about the cuts, and we've seen states that have put on the table some very substantial state cuts, and we're seeing increases in tuition that gets public attention, so we're increasing tuition dramatically. What public institutions are doing is increasing tuition to do the best that they can to close the gap in the money that states are no longer investing. And so students are now paying a huge percentage as compared to the past of the cost of attendance, and the debate about that social compact, what is the value, is the one that really needs to happen. And so there are a number of states that have put on the table budgets with draconian cuts, and I put Wisconsin in that list. As Susan said, we'll let the politics of your state play out. But there is this national conversation that needs to take place so that we stop fighting about the amount that we're investing and argue about the value of making that investment. I think that's the healthier debate.
Mm-hmm. Louise in River Falls, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I'm a tenured professor in northwestern Wisconsin, so I would be happy to answer questions about how this has all impacted us. In a nutshell, I think what's ironic is I actually teach management and human resources, so I'm having a very hard time going to class and talking about evidence-based management practices and then seeing exactly the opposite being done to myself and to my colleagues. This is no private business could survive treating employees like and changing policies and benefits and so on like it's been happening here. I've been on several failed searches, which is an incredible waste of time and resources, and disheartening to see that we can't hire qualified, you know, high-quality people.
Why haven't you been able to do that?
Our salaries are low to our competitors, and without decent benefits, that used to be what helped us because our salaries were always low in terms of competition, but we had good benefits, and luckily we have a great location. So that can sometimes help, but it's pretty sad when you're relying on a geographic location to recruit people. And now we don't, so it's difficult for us to even do that. You know, people are leaving. They're talking about leaving. We've had lots of early retirements of people that we couldn't afford to lose, and we can't replace them. You know, we've been working really nickel and dime for years, and we were happy to do it. We were a highly motivated group, and now it just... you know, it's sort of keeping your head down. People are afraid to speak up. It's a very, very interesting. I mean, partly I'm fascinated by it as a social scientist to watch it happening. But I brought 20 years of industry experience and all sorts. And I'm now, you know, regretting my choice of coming here. And I'm a UW-Madison grad, so I have great loyalties. I no longer do. My youngest just went to University of Minnesota. Believe it or not, that's not unusual. You know, many of my neighbors are moving to Minnesota. So it's so much more. And I actually would challenge this idea that somehow tenure gives you more flexibility. You know, how we manage and those decisions need to be worked on. There's no doubt I could go on and on about the problems that, you know, some of that causes. But tenure actually can keep salary costs lower because we tend to come and then we stay. And we certainly don't have the increase in salary year to year. And so actually, without tenure, you would see a lot more movement because my going rate for my position is many thousands of dollars higher than what I'm currently being paid.
Mm-hmm. Susan, would you like to...
that's actually a myth.
Yeah, Susan, you want to start with your response?
Well, I appreciate what she's saying, and certainly the this experience of not being able to hire qualified faculty is a distressing one. I think the question for the citizens of the state of Wisconsin is what kind of public higher education system do you want, and what do you think the citizens deserve? And from this one caller, you can hear the beginnings of, or maybe they're not just the beginnings, but the cracking of a system that needs attention if it's going to survive and thrive in the way that the state needs it to and the way that the state would benefit from having it be.
Would you like to respond, Richard?
Just a couple of thoughts. I mean, your most recent caller, you could sense the passion and the emotion that's driving this issue. If you look at the data, which I've seen, and again, we're not from Wisconsin, so we look it up as best we can, but it's clear that the compensation levels for faculty are about 20-25% below peer institutions across the country. And so your caller's concern is I think, correct. But it goes back to what Susan just said. What kind of public higher education does Wisconsin want? But even more than that, what really is the role of public higher education in Wisconsin? And that value conversation, I think, is a healthy starting point. And I would encourage the Board of Regents, if, as you suggest, Kathleen, that all of these changes to the statute are, in fact, going to become the law, I would really encourage the Board, in their fiduciary role and with a high degree of respect for shared governance, to reach out to their colleagues and stakeholders within and across the university to figure out, one, how do we talk about the value proposition? How do we make this system work, notwithstanding the cuts that we're facing? And how do we send the right signal, more than the signal? How do we put in place formal policies that give some level of confidence to our faculty that, notwithstanding the change in the law, that the inherent values about tenure, especially, will be strongly protected? Failing that, this woman who we just heard from's concerns and predictions and projections I think are going to demonstrate what's up next.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Louise, for your call. And I do think that there hasn't been a full-fledged discussion of these enormous changes to the UW system. This is all happening for such big changes relatively quickly, and you would have thought that there would be really substantial public hearings on this, which hasn't taken place in the state, which is unfortunate. I mean, if you're going to, people maybe of goodwill want to change this system, and they have reasons for doing so, but it has to be open to the public to determine what the public wants in terms of higher education, I would think.
You know, Kathleen, if I can?
Yes, go ahead.
You know, you guys have a bit of a fire hose of change just over the course of the early part of 2015. You have a very challenging budget that's going to drain off about 20-25% of funding from the system over the next couple of years in state support. You've got changes put in place about how leadership of the campuses within the system are going to be selected, which in some ways reduces the influence of stakeholders, students, staff, faculty, to a certain extent. And now you have this, and there are only so many, I think, dramatic changes that a system like the university can perhaps absorb in essence in one lump sum. And even if they're all coming, a more balanced flow of how they are implemented might be worthy of consideration.
Let's go to Camille next in New Berlin. Hi, Camille.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that this is a budget item at all. I believe it's silencing and destroying any other voice other than the conservative Republican Party. A young man was applied to be on the Board of Regents. When it was turned out that he had signed the recall, his position was, his name was removed. We've removed the DNR scientists. And my only two questions for the people of Wisconsin, did you vote? Who did you vote for? Thank you.
Thanks, Camille, very much for your call. Well, Robin Voss, who unfortunately has not agreed to be on this program, and we really want this point of view. So, again, I reiterate not only to him, anytime you want to come and talk about this, and I know Scotty has put calls out to many Republican legislators as well, and nobody has said yes yet. So come on the air. We'd like to talk about all of this. They're big changes. But the Speaker of the Assembly has said that, well, there's a lot of politics in the UW system as well, and he doesn't think that conservative voices are represented as fully as they ought to be. Susan, what do you say to that?
Well, you know, I think if you start counting noses, you've probably lost the overall view of what's going on. So counting noses for liberals versus conservatives, I don't think it's going to get the conversation where it needs to be. As Rick said, all this dramatic change that's going on, to me, is one more indicator that shared governance needs to be protected in this state. These changes aren't things that can be managed by one group of people. They can't be managed simply by the legislature or the Board of Regents or pick a group, however you count your noses. I think that this is where the shared governance principle needs to come back into play here. You mentioned, Kathleen, public forum. Let's hear from people in the
yes.
state as to what they need and what they want and what do they value in higher education. What is it that they have ambition for their own children and their families and themselves? And what does the state need to do to get there? I doubt that anybody would speak up on behalf of less, a different kinds of quality, a lower quality. No one wants that. So how do you get to the high quality? How do you keep the high quality? And how do you have the conversation about that? So I'd bring it back to bring shared governance back into this to make it work.
And let's go to Tony in Madison next. Hi, Tony.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having this.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of this, I'm not in agreement that it's political, as people say. I think a lot of this is kind of a widget versus wisdom. I think we have a group of people in government that are trying to put it out on a more business-like set, a product instead of this growing wisdom that serves everybody later in the end, but a product that serves everybody right now. And I think that's one of the differences we have is we're looking at it from the side that our next widgets are going to be made by these people that can think for themselves and do these things because they have classically trained minds. And I think the government is saying, no, we just need to be able to put people on the line right now that can help our businessmen make what they make.
Fair point. That what we heard early on was we want people for the kinds of jobs, the businesses in Wisconsin. That should be one of the major purposes of education. Richard?
There is a national conversation going on. It's been going on for a number of years as to whether or not higher education is totally to focus on preparing a current workforce, and that's important. People pay a lot of money, and they want to get a degree that enables them to find a job, so we're okay with that. But there is also a valid school of thought that higher education has a larger purpose. In addition to preparing people for the current workforce, there's the need to create a solid citizenry, people who understand how to think and to act and to make decisions, people who are being trained not necessarily for their first job, but perhaps for their last job, meaning that it's an opportunity to learn lifelong skills. And to prepare them for the workforce, but not necessarily for their ultimate position. And that's a debate, Kathleen, that has driven some of the political arguments both here in Washington about higher ed and across the states, and is often used as a an element of the political debate about how much should we invest if perhaps we are not preparing a suitable number of people to fill the jobs that currently exist in Wisconsin. Higher education has multiple purposes, and we need to be realistic about what those purposes are, and it may well not be all for one purpose, a singular purpose, sorry. And I think that's what's exciting about the capacity of the University of Wisconsin to provide both for immediate needs and opportunities, but also to take the long view. Wisconsin will hopefully be around for hundreds and hundreds of years ahead as long as the union remains in existence, and we have to have the long view just as we have the immediate view of current students.
More phone calls in a moment. Our lines have been very crowded. I'm sorry if you're having a hard time getting through, and if you can't in the minutes that remained, go to our Facebook page because there's a discussion going on there of a very important issue, and so you can leave your comments there, or you might be able to get through yet in the minutes that we still have. 800-486-8655. Our guest this hour talking about tenure and shared governance and the changes to both. They wrote a piece that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that we thought was interesting. They are Richard Ligon, who is president of the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges. Susan Wheeler Johnston is executive vice president and chief operating officer of the same organization. And we're talking to you at 800-486-8655. We'll return to more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Bill in Watertown is next. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Two brief points. If I were a professor and I could go to a place where there's tenure and academic freedom, I would not choose Wisconsin. My daughters both have a recent master's degree graduates from the UW. I would not have sent them to Wisconsin. I saw in Act 10 what happened. Teachers were demoralized when they lost their academic freedom. Second point, and this is about, you asked a question earlier, insight into the politicians, what's driving this. And it's been touched on, but I'll just say one other thing. Robin Voss has specifically stated this. Conservatives tend to have this old three states of Europe viewpoint on the church, the state, and loyalty to the bourgeoisie or the blue bloods or businessmen. And they think short-term. Corporations think short-term. This needs to be thought of as the common good, as mentioned in the preamble to the Constitution, and it needs to be looked at as an investment in the long term. And when one of your guests talked about quality rather than short-term price, that's exactly what she's hitting on. And we need to do a much better job of framing it in that language and calling out politicians who do not understand long-term investment.
Thank you very much, Bill.
You're welcome.
Response, either of our guests?
I couldn't agree more. I think that his language about the common good is exactly the right one, that higher education is a common good. It's, I guess it's maybe just a cliche these days, but it's true that higher education does help the individual, better life, better way of living, and so on, better health. But it's a common good because it makes the country stronger. It strengthens our economy. It strengthens our intellectual capital as a nation. The common good is a really excellent point for, I think, people to remember as they talk about higher education.
And let's go to Karen next in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two comments. First of all, it's not only faculty governance that is damaged and destroyed by these actions, but in fact, since merger in the 1970s, academic staff, employees who are like student services people with master's degrees and PhDs, professionals, have also had a place in Wisconsin, only in Wisconsin, in governance of the university system, and as well students. But with this legislation, that's gone. Universities can do whatever they want, whatever they feel like doing. It would not be consistent. Secondly, the legislature seems to have forgotten that they actually have the flexibility to lay off tenured faculty. We know that all too painfully here at UW Oshkosh, where a number of tenured faculty were laid off during the 1970s. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. Richard?
Just a couple of points. The Wisconsin the university's credo or mission, the Wisconsin idea, certainly seems to be under siege in many of these conversations, and I think your caller demonstrated the history of multi-stakeholder in engagement in the point I think she was alluding to about the capacity to lay off tenured professors. The current law, and that's really the point of much of this conversation, Kathleen, the fact that tenure policy is written into statute, again, making Wisconsin unique, but if it works, it works, protects that essential value related to tenure. Tenured faculty shouldn't be removed unless there was a fiscal emergency, mm-hmm. Exigency, and that's embedded in the current statute, and that's what is at risk of going away if it comes off the statute and reverts to institutional or system-wide policy. And I think that's, in a nutshell, the concern that you're hearing from so many faculty about the uncertainty about this central value of making sure that the quality of the University of Wisconsin is protected. So I think she makes a good point.
Would this change be unique among public universities throughout the country or not?
Yes, it would.
It would be.
University of Wisconsin-Madison is a member of the American Association of Universities, which is the 62 leading research universities in the United States and Canada. And with a change that makes tenure something that's easily done away with or skirted around, Wisconsin would be an outlier in that group. Not an enviable place for such a fine institution to be. And that's why people are watching this, to see what happens, to see is there some sort of will in the state to walk this back, to make it right, to ensure that these pillars of higher education in the United States are protected because of the strength that they allow to the institution.
Jim is next. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. I was one of the co-organizers of two public forums that took place about 2 months ago, one in the Fox Cities and one in the Wausau area. And we brought together a bunch of individuals from business, from the community in general, some governmental people, and also some higher education leaders. We split them up into groups so they weren't all talking to one another in their own niche, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we did hear what the people of Wisconsin want. And what it really is they really value the University of Wisconsin system's higher education as it was. At that time, the debate was really about the budget issue. And now that debate has been switched to shared governance, academic freedom, and the tenure policies. Well, the fact of the matter is that all of those recommendations or the suggestions that we had based upon those forums went to both the governor and to the legislators and to the Board of Regents. And in all honesty, it does not seem that they've heard us. They don't seem to be listening to anybody about this and are basically doing things based upon their own political philosophies or something along that line, because it was quite clear to us that what was happening at that particular time, and I suggest what's happening now, is not what the people of Wisconsin want.
Thank you very much. And I think that polling, if you're going to believe in polling, would prove that to be the case, that with changes to public education, with changes to the UW system, there isn't overwhelming support from people who live in the state of Wisconsin, which you would think might be giving some legislators pause.
Well, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Kathleen, I know we're coming to the end of the time here, but at some level, we have to be practical and maybe political realists. And if it's giving some legislators pause, that's a good thing. But if, in fact, the proposals move through the legislative process and they're signed, then the question is, so what's next? Because the truth is, we're talking about a question of excellence and quality, and it's to the leadership of the university and the board going forward as to how to make a very strong statement to faculty that we stand for these principles, to put that firmly into policy, make it inviolate, and find a way to move forward and to rebuild some trust. You don't want to get on a call like this and talk about the doomsday scenario. So I think that once whatever the outcome is indicated, we have to get, you all have to get practical to make some good, clear, strong decisions.
Mm. Thank you both so much for being with us, Richard, and thank you for being with us, Richard. Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Kathleen.
If you didn't get on the air, leave your messages on Facebook. We'd love to read them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Richard Ligon, president of the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges, and Susan Wheeler Johnston is executive vice president and CEO of the same organization. They wrote an opinion piece appearing in the Journal Sentinel earlier this month, which also will be on our Facebook page. And again, that invitation to members of Joint Finance and to the Education Committee is there. Scotty has been in touch with a number of the offices, and we have yet to have somebody explain all of this, which would be a good thing. We want to hear what you're thinking here. And so the invitation is there. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up, and we'll return to talk about stopping the violence and stopping the shooting. So that's coming up hour two of our program this Wednesday.